kittens, pups and dogs, chickens and
chickadees.
This is Magic the Amateuring. Welcome!
Hey, all of you lovely woodland creatures. I, Snow White, am one of your podcast hosts, and I've gathered you here today to teach you about Magic the Gathering and also the values of kindness and not taking things from witches.
Hey, and I'm your other host, the Weird Mirror in Snow White. And my name is Maria, the Weird Mirror. And I'm a sentient mirror, so my life sucks really hard. But I came to teach you about magic, too.
Man, I never thought about how badly that sentient mirror's life might have sucked.
Yeah, I think about it. People are just standing.
It's just there. It can't move anywhere.
It can't even stand. It's just hung on a wall. And a weird witch looks into it all the time and is like,
yeah,
show me shit. And the mirror's like, what if I was having a me time?
Exactly. And the mirror is also like, I'm so much better than this job.
Yeah.
Like, I could do so much more than this witch ever asks
like
me to.
Like, it could show world leaders what, you know, is going on, help them understand each other.
It could imagine. The witch never asked the mirror to show her anything that wasn't just, like, straight from real life. Like, hey, mirror, tell me a story.
Right. That never happened. Anyway.
What a rough life.
It's rough.
It's a hard knock life for mirrors.
So I'm a mirror here to teach you about magic. That's normal.
Also, we could be talking about MYR mirrors.
Mirrors.
Anyways, you guys.
Do you think anybody's made a magic deck with mirrors and mirror entity?
I mean, I'm sure it's at least been a limited deck at some point.
I hope so. Anyway, welcome to today's episode. Magic the Amateuring is for players who are new to the game of Magic the Gathering, as well as returning veterans and anybody who likes to chuckle below their belt buckle.
Whoa, don't do that. Make sure all chuckles are above the belt buckle.
Holy cow, you just kind of like kept rolling on that and there was no stopping. It was like an avalanche.
That's the best way anyone's ever described me. A human avalanche.
You are a human avalanche, Maria.
On today's show, we're going to be talking about the Magic Hall of Fame. What's the deal?
Yeah, man.
With it.
What is the deal?
We're going to tell you what the deal is. We're also got a great...
What's the deal with the Hall of Fame?
Jerry Seinfeld, what are you doing here?
There's just this brick wall, and I... Wherever there is a brick wall and a microphone, I am summoned.
We're also going to talk about modern rotisserie drafts. What the heck is that? It's not what you keep your chicken on before you eat it. It's, in fact, something else.
Although, we do recommend drafting your modern rotisserie. You need to get air in there to keep the heat and the flames going. So do make sure that you have a draft for your modern rotisserie if you have one.
Yep. So there's so much to look forward to on this show, you guys. I don't even know if you're going to be able to handle it, frankly.
Yeah. Honestly, you might, if you need help, just remember that you can always turn to the nearest sentient mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are obviously...
God knows I don't have anything better to do.
They're underutilized.
Thank you.
Underutilized tools.
For the noobs, modern rotisserie draft.
Well... Hello, friends, again, woodland creatures all. We were recently asked to participate in a modern rotisserie draft, which we gleefully accepted the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So we are 2 of 8 players who do not all live in the same city. You do not have to live in the same place, because a modern rotisserie draft is conducted online. Our tool of choice is Google Docs, a Google Docs spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
In which each of the 8 players has their name entered, and then we go round by round and draft cards. Maria, tell us a little bit more about it.
Sure. So we picked modern for our draft format. So that means we can take one of any card that is legal in modern.
That's right. That means it's as if, imagine you had one of every single card that is modern legal, face up on a table.
Right.
And you could take those cards, but you're taking them, you know, everyone can see it happening. Everyone's seeing what you're taking.
Mm-hmm. It's all face up.
Exactly. And there's only one copy amongst all 8 players.
Correct.
So once someone has taken a card, it is no longer available.
That's
it. It is off the table.
So you could do this with Legacy if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. You could even do it with Standard, which would be really weird.
Yeah, it would be very bizarre, but probably informative.
I think it'd be very interesting actually. We did with Modern because Megan and I, as we've mentioned on previous shows, are getting into Modern more now.
Absolutely. And also someone was like, Legacy, and we were like, F no.
We don't know anything about Legacy.
Nor do we have the time to right now go read about all them cards.
So we're doing Modern, and it's really interesting because there's a lot of psychology that goes into your picks because you've got to think of an archetype, try and draft that archetype, think about hating cards from other players that are useful in their synergies, find your place.
It's interesting reading signals when you can literally see what everyone has picked. And it does go, so you're numbered 1 through 8, the players are, and the first round of picks goes player 1 picks a card, player 2 picks a card, 3, 4, and so on. And then it kind of switchbacks. So then for, round 2, it'll go player 8 picks first, player 7, player 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, so my hand, I feel, was slightly, slightly forced in this draft. But I feel like it was the correct direction to go. So I was in spot... What was I, 5?
You're at 5.
I was in spot 5. So what I had noticed is nobody had taken any red spells.
Absolutely. And I think you picked arguably the best one.
Lightning Bolt.
Just really solid.
Yep. I basically put a line in the sand that said, I will be playing Burn. Is this the deck I wanted to draft? Probably not. But at the same time, you know what? I think it's really good.
Absolutely.
It's a real jerk of a deck, you guys. So I just continued down the burn trail, and nobody really has been challenging me so far. We're not done with this draft, by the way.
No.
We still got quite a way to go. We're on pick 19 at the moment.
Out of 40.
Yeah, out of 40.
40 picks, man.
And
it's
so
a lot.
I have cards like Lightning Bolt and Goblin Guide. I picked new ones like Goblin Piledriver and Exquisite Firecraft.
Those are both exciting.
Try that stuff out. And then I also have stuff like Rift Bolt, Searing Blaze, Searing Blood, just a lot of burn.
Just you're gonna go at people's faces.
I've got burn and goblins. That's my plan right now.
Pretty great, man.
Goblin burn.
Pretty great. Yeah.
What are you
goblin
doing,
burn.
Megan?
Well, I was picked 7, so you feel like you were left with few options. I really was, especially since my preferred archetypes are usually blue or control, and players 1 and 2 picked respectively Snapcaster Mage and Path to Exile.
Yeah.
Which I can't disagree with them. Those would have been my picks 1 and 2. So, and you had taken Bolt.
Yep.
So, I was sort of left in this place of like, I'm not sure. And I was like, do you know what? F it. Let's go all in on like an archetype, not even necessarily cards that are amazing. But just an archetype that I think will be fun. So I first picked Lingering Souls, just being like, also, I only had one more person to signal, but fuck it. I was telling them.
Yep.
Everyone in
this
that draft, I was like, I am sticking my flag and tokens. And if you dare F with my flag, I'm going to come after you.
Right.
I'm going to come after you. I'm going to get you.
Yeah.
So I first picked Lingering Souls, and I second picked Liliana of the Veil, just because that's just a damn strong card.
Good card.
Yeah, man.
How are you liking your picks so far?
You know, it's been a lot of fun. You can get a lot of really solid cards with black white, mostly because there's solid black removal. So someone did. Oh, I'm so angry. Someone picked Bitter Blossom. The guy who picked Path to Exile second picked Bitter Blossom, which I was not expecting.
And he's not even gonna play it.
And which, if I had been thinking about it, I probably would have picked it earlier. But, my brain does not always encompass all of the cards that are in Modern right now. So.
I hope I play the Bitter Blossom guy.
Yeah, man.
I want him to play that card. Thank you for helping me.
I should have picked that. But besides my Lingering Souls, I've picked up the Celestial... What is it? Oh, God. I always forget the name of the card. Spectral Procession is what I'm thinking of. Both of the Sorins, the two better Elspeths of the three. And then, some solid black removal. Some Dismember, some Inquisition of Kozilek. So some efficient black discard spells for a little bit of card advantage.
Yeah, I think it's great. We've got a whole bunch of different decks that people are playing. Mm-hmm. And people are mostly being nice, except for the player immediately to my left, whose name is April. And she was a judge on the show when she talked about Cube.
And April, we trusted you.
We trusted you.
We trusted you, April.
And you betrayed us.
Gosh.
And she's texting me, trash-talking me all the time.
It burns.
And I'm like, oh, literally, it burns. She's stealing my burn. She took Lightning Helix from me. And this all I have to say, April, is watch out. You know, watch out. Watch your back. That's a threat. That's a threat, April. I don't even know if she listens to the show, but figured I'd just put it out there.
But she should, because she'll know to be watching out.
Yeah, so how this is going to work is we're just going to play either in simulators, because we don't own all of these cards, or we're going to make proxies if we don't own them, and we're going to play out some of these matches.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty exciting.
I'm actually really excited because, you know, I haven't played a whole ton of Modern.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to play with some of these decks. And, you know, Aaron Campbell, host of Girlfriend Bracket, is going to hate me for playing Burn.
But, I mean, but you know, like you said, you were kind of pushed into it.
If nobody else picked Lightning Bolt, like...
Yeah, what are you going to do? Bolt. You got to pick Lightning Bolt.
You guys are going to be dirtling around with expensive creatures, and I'm just going to be like, burn your face.
Hey, I'm not.
No, you're not. But these other people have some... I don't even know what some of these people are doing. I do know what Chuck is doing. He's post 8. He's basically building... Hexproof, aka Boggles.
That's true. He is. He is building Boggles. I've been thinking, I was like, I wonder if he picked Daybreak yet?
Let me look.
I don't think he has. Someone should hate that Daybreak from him at the last minute.
Oh, that would be the worst.
That would be so mean.
So he's got like Noble Hierarch, Geist of St. Traft, Birds of Paradise, then a bunch of lands. He's picked basically every land ever.
Yeah, he got a lot of the lands, which is smart.
Swan Song, he has Gaddock, Teague. So yeah.
Interesting.
He's
going some very interesting directions with his deck.
Yeah.
The guy who first picked Snapcaster, people kind of just let him have the blue.
He's got Cryptic Command there second, then Remand and Serum Visions.
Which, God, if Jesus Christ.
Yeah. He's got Thassa deck. Was his last pick.
But he's gone in a kind of a bizarre Merfolk direction.
Yeah, Master of Waves is down there.
Which, to be fair, I considered first picking Cryptic Command, but I thought that the Path to Exile guy was going to go blue instead of black.
No, he went Dark Confidant, Bitter Blossom.
Exactly, so he ended up going black, which was a big surprise to me. I was very mad when I saw that. I was like, F you!
Somebody's playing Artifacts as well, which I think would be really fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wyrmcoil, Tezzeret, Sundering Titan, Mox, Opal, Moldstone Golem, that sounds really fun.
Yeah, that also sounds like a great time. So these decks are pretty spicy.
Yeah, they really are.
I think this is one of the fun aspects of a Modern Rotisserie draft, is that you get some really interesting looking decks going on and some really interesting looking kind of themes to these decks.
Matthias was criticizing my pick of Thunderbreak Regent.
To be fair, I think he's right.
Whatever.
But
sometimes you just need a 4/4 flyer that will also burn you for 3 if you target it.
I mean,
and kill it.
I mean, okay. Okay. Okay.
You'll be the top of my curve. Don't worry, everybody. I'm not insane. Might not even play him. But you do have to pick lands. That is something you need to think about.
Yeah, man. Absolutely, you do.
Somebody stole my Arid Mesa, so I kind of gave up on playing any white.
That's fair. You did get a Stomping Ground? No, not
Stomping. No, I have a Sacred Foundry.
Sacred Foundry is the red-white one. Yeah. Drafting lands, a very interesting part of this. I feel like I'm kind of like you, where I'm going straight to color.
Yeah.
I'm just going black-white. I picked up a Marsh Flats, and maybe I'll try and pick up the Caves of Koilos or something.
Yeah.
You know, not the great land options, but they're going to be good enough to support me in just doing this two-color, jamming this two-color situation that I am.
Right. So we'll keep you guys updated and let you know how we do once we start playing out some of these matches. Because the draft does take some time right now. I think we've been at it for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not, and we're only halfway through.
Which is crazy.
You just kind of very relaxed, just sort of take your time and make your pick when you can. And then play your matches when you can. And so we'll see who comes out as champion of this Modern Rotisserie draft. Feel free to try this with your friends as well and just proxy up some cards and play and see how, you know, there'll probably be some really interesting games.
I'm very excited to play the games.
I know.
Super excited.
I'm very nervous because I've never played Burn before, and I'm worried I'll have to burn some creatures when I don't want to.
Just burn their face.
Oh Okay.
Face.
But what I really want is just to have a lot of goblins.
That's fair.
That's what I want in my heart. And then I want to win with Thunderbreak Region and be like, suck it, The More You Know, Magic Hall of Fame.
That's right, everybody. Today, we're going to be learning about all how you entered that great golden hall. That sounds like dying.
Sounds like you're speaking of Valhalla.
Yeah. Yep. Of magic.
The Valhalla of magic, as it were.
For which you do not have to die.
No.
To become a member.
No. Much not like a postage stamp. You do not have to be dead to receive this honor.
You have to be dead to be on a stamp?
Oh, yes.
Oh, wow.
The more you know. That's why we call this segment The More You Know.
We're learning so many things.
We're going to learn today about the Hoff.
That's right. And we don't just mean the wrestler, the Hoff.
What?
I made that up. There's not a wrestler named that.
No, there's just a guy who gets drunk and eats cheeseburgers and posts it on YouTube.
Is that a thing?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You know, the guy who is on Baywatch.
What? Oh, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know the actor from Baywatch who goes by the nickname The Hoff?
Dennis Hoffman?
Is that his name? No, it's not.
What is his name? Who is Dennis Hoffman?
Well, joining us...
Are you thinking of David Hasselhoff?
That's it. That's who I'm thinking of.
Oh, he also has Hoff in his name, though, yeah. But at the end.
Yeah, he recently said that that's what he wants to be called, The Hoff. And there's a video of him on YouTube drunkenly eating a cheeseburger over a toilet.
What?
Yep.
Really?
We educate Megan so much on this show.
We really do. Well, you guys, today it's not just Maria educating me about Dennis Hasselhoff. David Hasselhoff.
We also have a special guest, friend of the show, Matthias Hunt, here.
Hey there. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. I also didn't know that David Hasselhoff ate cheeseburgers over toilets.
Really?
But I didn't know he was on Baywatch.
Yeah. It's, you know, YouTube that.
Yeah, I was really confused.
If you want to watch a sad man on a downward spiral, watch that video.
The Hoff.
Yeah. What if I want to watch a happy man on an upward spiral?
Then watch, like, Pee-wee's Playhouse in the 80s.
Okay.
That's true. That show's great, you know?
I mean, he was a happy man in an upward spiral for a while.
You guys, I was thinking of Dustin Hoffman.
He definitely did not eat a drunken cheeseburger. I mean, maybe he has, but he hasn't put on the internet.
He looks like he could have. I don't know why I thought his name was Dennis.
Were you thinking of Dennis Quaid?
Maybe.
Dennis the Menace.
I think I was just thinking of names that started with D.
Were you thinking of a dentist?
Yes.
Okay, nailed it. So, Matthias, you know a lot about magic. Art. True?
I hope so. Otherwise, I'm just doing a real good job of faking it.
Okay. Matthias is an SCG commentator, former Rookie of the Year, and so you know a thing or two about magic and magic, the fame that magic can bring.
Right, so we're talking about this year's Hall of Fame. Which is the votes will be counted, I believe it's just in a few days here. So about, I think, on the 21st, that might be when this podcast comes out. That's the deadline for vote submission.
What day of the week is the 21st?
Good question.
What day of the week is it today? What is today?
Today is Tuesday.
Friday, July 17th. In which case, the 21st will be Tuesday. Now everybody knows when we recorded this.
Oh no!
We dated it!
They could come back in time and disrupt this episode.
Oh my goodness.
Wait, hey. By which case it would be happening.
Listeners, if you are able to time travel, come back and disrupt this episode.
Yeah. Okay, good. So if somebody shows up,
we'll know.
So Matthias, Hall of Fame, what's the big deal? Why do I care? What is it?
Right, so the Magic Hall of Fame is kind of interesting because you think about it in terms of like other sports. You know, if we talk about the Baseball Hall of Fame, there's a museum and... It honors, you know, retired players or people who are great in the game. You can go visit them and see exhibits about them. And it's really an honor. It's an honorary thing. It's really cool. So in Magic, we have a Hall of Fame. There's not a Hall of Fame museum. Magic's not really big enough to have something like that. You can't trip to Renton, Ohio to see the Magic the Gathering
Hall of Fame. I would love it to be in Ohio.
Renton, Washington, where we have the shirts that these players were wearing when they won the Pro Tour.
Right.
Someone emails them. They're like, hey,
these were his sleeves.
Hey, we need your shirt.
Like Patrick Chapin's is really nice. and it's like a button down tie.
That's why Patrick Chapin wears a button down when he's in the top eight, because he's like, if they ever need the shirt for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And then there's that one guy who wore the shirt of the Pro Tour and won it, you know, and that'd be hanging up.
Oh, Kibler's leather jackets up there.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's pretty cool.
Is Kibler doing leather jackets now? I know Tom Ross does leather jackets. I know
that Kibler Tom Ross rocks a leather jacket.
No, it's excellent.
He's very good at it.
I know the Swedish Kibler wears a leather jacket.
I don't remember who the Swedish Kibler is.
Janssen, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I feel like, I mean, I can see it.
I just imagined it.
It's not a big stretch of the imagination. No. So there's no physical museum that you can go and see the sleeves and the shirts.
Sadly.
That these players had when they were making decisive victories.
No. So what it does do is they're actually, unlike other Hall of Fames, it's actually legitimate benefits to being in the Hall of Fame. So other than the fact that, you know, you get your name listed as being in the Magic Hall of Fame, you actually get lifetime in. There's like, you get a lifetime invite to the Pro Tour.
So you can just always go.
You can always go. You get invites.
Until you're 107.
As of right now, yes. You get an invite to every
Pro
Tour.
Even when you're 108.
That crazy senile old person on the Pro Tour. Oh, great. They're... get a free win.
Right. So you get invites to all the Pro Tours. You get an appearance fee at them. And you get 3 buys at Grand Prix for life. Wow. And you get 15 QPs for every Magic Online Championship Series season. That one's not as big as some of the other ones, but it's still pretty good.
I take it.
It's a benefit, man.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple other things, like you get to play the World Magic Cup qualifiers. I don't think you have to qualify for those anymore.
Nice.
But yeah, the idea behind it is, remember that when Wizards has come up with the Pro Tour, like a lot of times we talk about it like it's like we're covering a sport, right? But Wizards of the Coast doesn't really view the Pro Tour as a sport. They really view it as a marketing tool instead. And I think while they do that, what they're trying to do is they're trying to say, hey, if this guy is one of the greatest players in the game, it's really good marketing for us to make sure he's always at all the Pro Tours, because we really, you know... keeping your, like for example, Paolo got inducted into the Hall of Fame, and had he not been inducted that year, he only actually got silver that year, and he was just about to lose his qualification for all his Pro Tours, which especially for a player from Brazil is not an easy thing to get back.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah. You know, that's kind of, it's an honorary thing of saying, hey, you know, you don't have to fly every weekend anymore. You're a big enough deal and you're good enough for promoting the game that we just like to have you at all our events.
It's nice to have, you know, those, you know, celebrity kind of faces hanging around at the Pro Tour.
Right.
Those ones that you can always pick out of a crowd.
That's right.
Unless you have that thing where you can't tell the difference between faces.
Face blindness.
Yeah, man.
Oh my gosh.
Every time I think about that, it's still crazy to me.
It's so weird.
It's super weird. Can you imagine looking at two people's faces and not being able to tell the difference?
I mean,
or
you
who they are?
Like, if you have purple hair,
yeah.
And Matthias wears hats, and that might be the only way I can know who you guys were.
That's so crazy to me. That is so crazy. Anyways. Sorry, you guys. I am a little bit fascinated by the phenomenon of
also
face
buttons. If you're in the Hall of Fame, then Wizards will give you buttons when you go to GPs called, which say, I played a Magic the Gathering Hall of Famer, and you get to give them to people. So that's another benefit of making it into the Hall of Fame, is you get a lot of buttons.
Oh, an endless supply of buttons?
I bet if you get as many buttons as you want.
Yeah, you can just like email them and be like, hey, I need more buttons.
And what if you were just lying, though? You just wanted to collect as many buttons as you could, and then you made a huge button monster?
I bet you could get away with that.
So you email the Hall of Fame, you email Wizards, like, and you're like, hi, this is just me.
Me again.
Hall of Famer Luis Scott Vargas. Do you mind sending me some buttons? And they're like, is this a new email address that we can contact you at? And you're like, yes.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I need 600 buttons. Going to a lot of events this
you
year.
You just emailed us last week.
I've been to a lot of events. This past week.
Here's your buttons.
Thanks, guys.
New idea.
The Hall of Famer button, also a really great way to help people with face blindness know who they just played.
Face blindness is a serious thing.
I know. You guys, it's fascinating. Moving on.
Listen to that episode on Radiolab about it if you guys are really into it.
Yeah, man, I will.
Anyway, Hall of Fame. So when did this start?
The Hall of Fame started, I believe it was 2005.
So not that long ago.
Not that long ago.
10 years ago now, you guys.
Yeah, I might be off by a year or two here. But, you know, originally there was a thing where they were putting 5 people in every year because they wanted to get a baseline of people in the Hall of Fame. But now it's fewer get in every year. But, yeah, it's something that at least they're doing for the foreseeable future. You know, there are some, there, depending on how you look at it, there might be some issues with it. For example, the number of people in the Hall of Fame is only ever going to go up. So you're just going to keep giving more people invites to the Hall of Fame, which said to the Pro Tours. And what you notice is, like, the people they inducted really early on, don't really use their invites very much. They're players who had long stopped playing. So, you know, like the O'Mahony Schwartz brothers are in the Hall of Fame, but I don't think they really use their Pro Tour invites. Recently, though, when you look at the people who were inducted in the last 3 to 4 years, these are people who are still very active in Magic. And it's one of the only sports where, well, and so I don't actually want to call it a sport. It's one of the only situations where active players get inducted. And, you know, people are kind of viewing it as, hey, this is my reward for top aiding ex pro tours or whatnot, you know.
Okay.
We saw, right, like Paolo got invited, now Paolo goes to every pro tour. So I guess if you're looking at it from a marketing thing where the pro tour exists to promote Magic, there's really no reason to not just keep having more and more people invited to the pro tour. You know, it doesn't really cost you anything. I think if you're looking at this from a competitive sports point of view, it's a little problematic because as you start to, you know, the Hall of Fame is just going to continue to eat more pro tour slots, which makes the game really stagnant.
Do they have a finite number?
Of Hall of Famers?
Of Pro Tour slots.
No. So your options would either be to make it harder for current players to get onto the Pro Tour, or to just keep letting the Pro Tour grow in size. Which, like I said, from a marketing, if this is a promotional tool, there's no problem there. If it's a competition standpoint, yeah, there's probably, that's not great.
Although you are talking about, you said they used to induct 5 people every year, and that's become fewer and fewer.
Mm-hmm.
So you could also look at it in terms of, Over the course of 10 years, saying it's between 2 and 5 people. So we'll say it's, you know.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
3.5 or 4 people.
3.5.
3.5 people get inducted every year.
Shiro's inducted.
You're still only growing it by 35 people over the course of 10 years.
Right. So questions, are they still using their invites? You know, if those 30, because yeah, like I said, in the last, I think, 5 years, everyone we've inducted has definitely used all their invites.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I'm saying it's not 35 in the scope of a pro tour of 430 people isn't particularly,
I mean, the pro tour is already, at least from, like, if you're looking at it from a sport or a competitive point of view, the pro tour is already way too big. You know, like asking someone, you know, to stay on the pro tour right now, what is, you have to top 50, right? And asking someone to top, like, right now when pro tours are around 400 people, reasonably expecting a player to top 50 400 man events, just with how Magic is as a game, is really difficult. Even if you're the best player in the world, the numbers just don't really work out right for that. So if you want to, like, approach this as a sport, you probably need to make that number smaller, not bigger. But like I said, if you don't view it as a sport, you view this as a promotional tool, great. This is
question.
Great.
Are players paying for their airfare to fly to these pro tours?
I believe the way they do it is you fly yourself there, but you get a $1,500 appearance fee.
Okay.
So okay. No.
Well, it's, you know, from their standpoint, if you think about it, like, oh, well, in a certain number of years, these people are probably going to fall off the Magic interest wagon, right? Because they've got other jobs where they're making money. They can't take the time off.
Mm-hmm.
They might be banking on that. Yeah. Anyway.
So, which we don't really know because there isn't, like, an elder generation of Magic, you know? The question is, you know, when these guys are 60, will they still play Magic? And at this point, that's anyone's guess. I mean, there's a lot of reasons you wouldn't, right? They'll have families, they'll have jobs, maybe they can't go to Pro Tours, but there's no 60-year-olds who play. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, you know? Will the Luis Scott Vargas of the world still be playing Magic in 20 years? Will they still want to go to all the Pro Tours?
I've sometimes thought about, what will I be like when I'm 75? Will I be sitting down and booting up Modo? And I'm like,
and it's still going to be the same.
I mean, yeah.
It's still going to be version 4.
I think I will be. I mean, like, that's...
Hopefully you don't have a Mac, you know? Still won't be able
God,
to
it work. Still won't be on Mac.
No, it'll only be on PC.
But it will be on Zyborg, which is going to be a new computer
the
system.
The computer system of the future.
Zyborg. And I'm going to be like, I still use a Mac. What's your deal? And they're like, shut up, Grandma. Go bake me a cake. And I'm like, I don't do that. I sling spells, motherfucker. And then they'll say...
You're going to be an awesome grandma.
Get back in your room. No, because, like, think about it. It's the perfect...
The kids are going to be like, grandma's being crazy again.
It's the perfect activity. activity if you're old because you want to play cards. They play cards all the time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You just have to sit there.
Magic is our future bridge.
Right. So, I mean, like, as I've gotten older, too, it's not that, you know, like, I still really like playing Magic. I don't feel that drive to go to every GP anymore. It's like, there's a GP in, there's, you know, there's an SCG open in Chicago this weekend. I'm not going to go to it because I was like, 7-hour drive, not really feeling it. There will be more Magic tournaments. And I imagine that sentiment's only going to get bigger as I get older.
Yeah.
I don't know if I had a standing invite to a pro tour. I don't know if I'd, my, like, that would ever get to the point where I'd skip a PT. Like, those things are fun.
I mean, it's a great excuse to see the world.
Yeah.
If nothing else.
Of Milwaukee and...
Oh, you know, where's the next pro tour? It's going to be
Vancouver
Milwaukee.
And then Milwaukee.
Next one is Milwaukee.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Wait,
Vancouver's
Vancouver
first.
Is about to happen.
Yeah.
And then the one this fall is Milwaukee. Hey,
Milwaukee. See the world.
See the world.
See the world. So the actual process of being inducted into the Hall of Fame isn't that Wizards just chooses.
Right.
No.
So this one they've actually modeled off of sports, which is pretty interesting. So there's a 200-player selection committee. And how the selection committee is determined is, first of all, anyone who has 150 lifetime pro points gets to be on the selection committee. That's also the bar, by the way, to be eligible for the Hall of Fame.
If you want to know how players get pro points, listen to a past episode of Magic the Amateuring. This is the end of this PSA.
Right. So I think there's about 40 players right now who fit into that category. And then they round the number up to 200 by, and this is, like I said, where it comes from other sports, by adding members of the community. And it's not just adding, like, you know, well, there's a 2.0, you know, they're adding whoever they want to add. But so in, say, the Baseball Hall of Fame, what they generally do is they want people who are really well informed about baseball. So generally the people who elect the Baseball Hall of Fame are sportscasters, reporters, you know, people whose job is every day to read the stat line of every single baseball game and to know their history in that. So actually, Wizards does a pretty good job of that. I believe it's a lot of members of Wizards of the Coast, and then prominent, like, writers in Magic or commentators. For example, I'm on the selection committee this year, and so is Patrick Sullivan and Cedric Phillips. I believe Evan Irwin also has a vote from Star City. And maybe Jared Silva. I think he does. I think it's about 5 people at SCG have it. I don't know if it's like, for example, I got my vote a year after Patrick and Cedric did. So it's just, it's a numbers game. You know, like, does Nick Miller have one? I'm not sure. I know Glenn Jones did at one point, things like that. But the, yeah, so prominent podcasters can have them as well.
What?
You got, yes, it is possible that someday you guys will get a Hall of Fame vote.
We need a Hall of Fame vote.
You could. I do know. That, for example, Joey Pasco, I believe, at one point had a Hall of Fame vote. I don't believe he and Big Head Joe are podcasting anymore, so I don't know if he still has
one.
We
would definitely know if someone nicknamed Big Head Joe were podcasting. We would know.
I feel like I would know. Like, I don't know.
I'm dating myself here. I'm talking about podcasts that don't exist anymore. It's great.
Do you know this fun fact, listeners? The motto of this show is Good Luck High Five.
Yeah. And we once considered... Like a year and a half ago.
Yeah, this is a behind-the-scenes look at our show.
Considered changing the podcast name to Good Luck High Five, mm-hmm. and found out that, in fact, other Minnesota Magic players had already taken that name, mm-hmm. like, several
Ryan
years ago.
Ryan Overturf had a podcast.
Can you believe that? Like, what are the chances that, number one, we both wanted to call it
Good Luck High Five.
Two,
we're in the same state.
It's weird.
Three, I don't have a third one.
It's fine.
That's okay.
Bananas. Okay.
Right. So, okay. So, everybody submits their vote. And each year, you can submit a ballot of anywhere between 0 and 5 players. And
can it be any players?
Only players with 150 lifetime pro points. Okay. So, there's that group of about 40 I was talking about. Players are not allowed to vote for themselves, by the way.
Oh, dang it.
For what that's worth.
Makes sense.
We would vote for ourselves.
I believe the community gets one vote on it this year. There's a public vote where you can go on the Wizards website and fill out who you would like to have on the ballot. Mm-hmm. I believe... what the community votes on will be one of, has, they have one spot on the selection committee as well. But anyone getting 40% or more, having their name appear on 40% or more ballots gets inducted.
Okay, well, that seems fairly straightforward. The one thing is, though, peeps don't be agreeing on this kind of stuff.
Yeah, man. Notably, a lot of people don't choose not to use all 5 spots on their ballot.
Yeah.
You do not have to vote for 5 people. You do not have to vote for any people. You can vote anywhere between 0 and 5.
I abstain to make a statement, for instance.
Or
what, Megan?
I don't know. I just got, like, my brain repeated the word or a couple of times, and then I got lost.
Okay.
So, yeah.
It's like when you go into the voting booth on election day.
Yeah.
And you want to choose all the people for president.
Yeah. That's a bad, bad idea.
Sometimes I just check all the boxes, you know?
I don't think they count your vote if you do that.
I think they count it three times.
Or, for instance, if you say you wanted to quote unquote vote because you believe in the democratic process and you want to be a good democratic citizen, but you also believe that all the candidates are bullshit.
Yeah. I definitely know people who do that and they just leave their ballot blank.
Exactly. But you voted, and that's important.
Technically.
So yeah, you can vote anywhere between 0 and 5 people. And how do you know how many people were inducted last year?
Last year it was like three. Right?
No. Yeah. And which I think has been about the norm for a couple of seasons now.
Yeah, it would be that would be kind of difficult for 5 people to get more than 40%, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, that's a lot. And I have also heard that if no one appears on 40% of ballots, then they induct one person, and it is the person who appeared on the most.
Oh, okay.
Whatever that percentage is.
Yeah, last year it was Wafo Tapa, Makihito Mohara, and then LSV, right?
LSV has been on for a while.
Okay. No, or sorry, there was one other person. Maybe, I forgot. This is my 3rd year voting, so I'm probably confusing them.
That's all right.
How do you feel getting a vote in this? Does it make you feel like, oh, I'm a valued part of the community, you know?
Well, I mean, part of my job is, I mean, granted I'm covering the SEG circuit, but right, like, before I do a broadcast, I definitely am researching players, decks. I read a lot of articles because I have to for my job. So, as if you want, like, It certainly is an honor, I guess, if you want to talk about, like, being informed on the community and the history of Magic. Like, yeah, it makes sense that, like, I probably am up to date on that stuff. I know, you know, I have to say, that's part of my job, I have to stay really in touch with that. But yeah, it's definitely an honor for it.
A lot of people take it very seriously and make spreadsheets based on the stats of all the players who are on the ballot, for instance.
Right. I wish I had gotten my vote by pro points instead of by being a commentator, but I will take it this way.
Yeah, Makihito Mahara. Was inducted last year as well as Paul Rietzel.
Okay, it was Rietzel was the third one. And then,
and then Wafo Tapa. Yep.
Nice.
Which actually was my ballot last year. I only voted for all 3 of them.
Well,
and,
look at
and
that.
And I remember, so this is a thing that a lot of people who have a vote are usually actually very vocal about. People will write articles and post them about who they are voting for and why they are voting for
them. I know, that actually surprised me.
Yeah. Unlike communism, you don't have to stay silent.
Yeah, so this stuff's kind of problematic in that I don't really know what we're trying to accomplish. So I guess you could first say I want to find the statistically best players of the game, in which case, okay, well you know, there's math here, we can look at numbers and do that.
I think follow I don't remember his handle on Twitter, but PJ, who does all of the who tweets a lot of stats leading up to pro tours and other big events.
Right, and there's some things like I think you have to watch out for that. For example, there's a, you know, if you want to talk about stats, a Justin Gary actually is a player who has very strong stats this year. At the same time, I don't believe any of his finishes are more recent than 2000. And when you go talk about like Pro Tour top eights, there's some apples and oranges going on there. The Pro Tours were smaller. The best players were still present at them, but you know, in your Pro Tours in the 90s, the middle category of players were a lot weaker. Like the player getting 100th at the Pro Tour was not as nearly as strong as they are today. So it's a different accomplishment. Not to say that it's not a great accomplishment. You know, he has a great resume, but
a lot goes into it, right? So you could look at from a number of different perspectives.
Yeah. So first you can say, okay, do I want to pick the statistically best people in the game? And like, I think that's a legitimate way to go about it, especially if you want to talk about this as a sport. You know, for some people say that's the only thing that matters. At the same time, I don't think we really have a you know, it's not being treated as a sport right now. So a lot of it is who do you want to have be a figurehead of the community? And I think I do look at it a lot that way as well, because I think that's how Wizards is more or less looking at it.
Yeah, I think that's important. I mean, it really is.
Absolutely.
In my opinion, anyway.
So I also want to note an interesting phenomenon. Speaking of people being very, very vocal about who they're voting for, I feel like in the last few years we've also seen the number of inductees shrink, in part because people are also utilizing this option to put fewer people on their ballots. Just like when you're eating a pie, At the beginning when you're eating the pie, you eat a lot of pie because you don't have any pie in you at the moment. But as you get more and more full of the good parts of the pie, you're gonna slow down on the pie eating.
Megan, I would like to take issue with your metaphor because before I
just
eat pie,
keep eating pie,
I've already probably eaten two other pies. So I already have a lot of pie in
Well,
me.
So this metaphor is not...
You're implying, Megan, that there's diminishing returns to eating pie, whereas I might argue that there's exponential returns to eating pie.
Oh my god.
That, like, if I've already eaten one slice and the second one's even better.
Of all the things that I've said on this podcast so far, you guys are taking issue with my pie metaphor. I just want to point that out.
Yep. That's my job, Megan.
Yeah, so there are some really interesting voting things going on. Okay, first of all, when you talk about people who are at, you know, the leave it blank community, it's reasonable, you know, you say, hey, we don't need to keep inducting people. I will say there's some bias going on that you want to talk, the people who tend to want to leave the ballots blank are the people who are currently in the Hall of Fame a lot of the time.
By the way, the Leave It Blank community was a 70s funk band.
Hey everybody, we're Leave It Blank, we're the Leave It Blank community.
Right, so you have some of that going on, right? Where people in the hall, like, it's kind of like a club. It's like, I'm in the club. I don't want these other people in my club going on. Which I know it's legitimately going on, you know. Some of the most vocal proponents of not voting for people are Hall of Famers. At the same time, there's also issues, I think, going on. There's a strong regional bias to Hall of Fame voting. And I don't think that people are explicitly doing it. I think actually people who get votes, by and large, are very good about this. And they take it seriously. But at the same time, I mean, like, there's a large monetary value to being in the Hall of Fame. You know, you're voting someone a lot of money, a lot of pro tours for life. So, okay, I am more inclined to be in tune with people I know than with people I don't know. And Americans get in the Hall of Fame much more easily than people from other countries. Yeah. And that is, you know... I think that is certainly true in a lot of these situations.
Definitely an interesting phenomenon to consider, particularly as the Hall of Fame continues to grow.
And particularly as Wizards decides to erect a physical Hall of Fame in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Where we will have the shirts we previously talked about.
And sleeves.
Yeah.
All I know is that one of my votes, once Wizards gives us a Hall of Fame vote, will be for a cheeseburger.
Oh, I was gonna say like a cat.
Oh, yeah. Mine was
like
an honor.
Like
of
a magic playing off. Cat.
Yeah.
A cat who's really good at magic.
Well, thank you for coming on and giving your perspective on the Hall of Fame, Matthias. I feel like you've educated me up in my brain spot.
Absolutely. If we were to do a brain scan right now, the area of brain that is consistently... you know, associated with Hall of Fame discussions would really be lighting up right now.
Yeah, the cerebral cortex.
Yeah, also the pie portion of my brain.
Which is known as the left.
So I have an actually interesting thing. As someone, are you, like, for people on your side, and I've always wondered this about the Hall of Fame, is do people who are not in the pro scene care? You know, like, does this matter?
I would say that I definitely care because, as you mentioned, it does feel like more of, not even necessarily like a marketing tool, but a community tool. And I care about the people that are representing the community.
And I feel like it's an achievement that is something to either say, if you're, you know, interested in becoming a pro in magic to work towards.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, even if you're not, it's something nice to look at the top and say, these are the people who really either mastered the game or represent the game well. It's nice to be able to have those heroes, quote unquote, to look on from down here below.
Absolutely. I think it's a nice part of a lot of types of communities. Yeah. Magic being one of them.
Have you taken the time to vote in the community vote?
Yes.
Absolutely.
So who'd you vote for?
We're not. Are
secret.
We? Are we?
Oh,
we're
secret.
Secret.
I'm secret.
We're You're not secret those. About. We're not those talk all about it types.
I did have a write-in candidate.
I just clicked on all of them.
It was cheeseburger.
You could click on. You could click on all of them.
No, you couldn't. Click
you
on
did
all
the,
of them.
You just did the Maria
being,
voting. The Maria
being,
voting style.
Yeah. I did have a write-in. I put a cat that can play magic well.
Oh, if only.
That'd be sweet.
That'd be great.
Just think of it like. Go.
Maria, the people who are listening to the show can't see you mime that cat.
I know, but they can feel it in their hearts.
All right. Well, Matthias, thank you so much for coming on and talking about the Hall of Fame with us.
Yeah, thanks again for having me.
Where can people connect with you if they want to see more of you or hear more of your face body?
You can always tune into SCG Live. I'm doing commentary there along with Cedric Phillips and Patrick Sullivan. Also, you can follow me at MTG Matthias on Twitter.
High five, man. Oh, that was really weak. Do it again. Come on, better. Put your back into it.
Nah, we're just bad at this.
No, all right. His hands do not work well together.
It's just the wrong contour.
It really is.
Everybody, that's Magic the Amateuring for this week. Be sure to tune in next week when we'll get back to talking about Magic Origins. We'll have played our first drafts with it, hopefully, and get some more thoughts on the format as it is new and births its way into the world.
That was a... You could have... All right.
You could have said it a lot better. You're right.
Do you know what? It's okay. You're only a sentient mirror.
That's true. I mean, I feel like you're really being rude. By saying
that? I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said only. God, you're right. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Look, I'm just Snow White.
No, you're not just Snow White. Be proud of who you are. You have pale skin. You burn like an asshole in any kind of sun.
Yep. I'm just, I speak with animals.
You fall asleep easy.
Just ease so quickly. Just like.
To be honest, your boyfriend, pretty hot.
I make poor decisions about who to trust.
Yeah.
Especially in the witch department.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I am who I am.
Yeah. I accept that. Everybody, hey, thanks for joining us on the show. If you want to hear more of our face voices, you can always do that on magictheamateuring.com, where we have every single episode we've ever made of all time in history ever.
Absolutely. If you want to hear our foot voices, you're going to have to tune into our YouTube channel, Foot Puppet Theater.
That sounds like a fetish waiting to happen. What am I trying to say? That sounds like you can get the wrong kind of audience.
Yeah, I mean, but they're very, like, classy kids productions.
I don't care.
But with feet instead of, like, hand puppets.
Can I tell you a story?
Sure.
So, Maria Insight, I was once traveling in Wales, and I went to the Eisteddfod, which is a big cultural festival, and we were told to wear wellies on our feet, which is rubber boots, because the field is very muddy. And so I did, and I had a lot of pictures of myself at the festival, and I uploaded them to Flickr because I take a lot of photos, and there's some good ones in there. Anyway, I like slowly realized that my pictures were being added to weird rubber fetish groups because I'm like it wearing the boots. Anyway, it was just weird to get those notifications.
That's super bizarre.
Like, your photo has been added to Girls in Rubber or whatever. And I'm like, give me a break. I'm like sitting, I mean, like hot and sweaty in a field. Never mind. This is just sounding more and more appetizing. Anyway, you can also download our episodes on iTunes, mtgcast.com, themeatery.org, or Stitcher, which is an app for listening to podcasts. If you like our podcast, if you had a good time, you know, hanging out with us, you can support us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/mtacast. We'd love to have you as part of the family. I just sent out a batch of rewards, so if you want to get on the next batch of rewards, come and join us now, and I'll ship out rewards to you.
It'll be great. It's like a birthday gift delivered to your house.
It is. And we include a personal little note in all of them, by the way. So if you want a copy of Megan and my handwriting, actually my handwriting, to link me to a future crime, be sure to become a patron.
You could become a famous detective just from this Patreon.
Oh, God. Follow us on Twitter at MTACast and join that party. Because I'm always looking for the next milestone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In Twitter.
In Twitter.
Because we hit 2,000 followers a little while ago.
Yeah.
Now I'm like 3K, baby. Let's get there.
Keep your eye on the prize. All right.
Unless the prize is the sun, don't do that. Don't keep your eye on that.
And with that solid advice, Snow White and the Sentient Mirror are out.
Peace.